feet and daylight unto my path. And a light unto, a light unto my path, my path.
Welcome to Searchlight, a survey through Scripture with Pastor John Corson. It is our desire to bring you a systematic study of the entire Bible, chapter by chapter, book by book. Here on Searchlight, we are in the middle of a great adventure story. It is the story of Saul and David in the book of 1 Samuel. It is a story of contrasts that is very instructive for us. Saul is a man who has turned his back on the Lord and is trying to kill David. On the other hand, David is a man after God's own heart who is teaching us so many great lessons on how to walk rightly with the Lord. Let's now join Pastor John as we continue this story, beginning in 1 Samuel 23.
1 Samuel 23 this evening. David at this time, of course, is fleeing from Saul. Saul is the king of Israel. And Saul is intimidated by David. He's jealous of David. He's worried about David. For David has captured the affections. David has captured the imagination of the people of Israel. Saul, of course, his heart has turned hard against the Lord. He is now one who is being plagued by a demon from hell, and in so doing, he has been on a quest to take David down, to wipe David out. And David has been fleeing. Well, in chapter 23, as we saw a couple of Sunday mornings ago, if you were here, David at this time got word, verse 1 tells us, that the Philistines had mobilized to fight against the men of Keilah. Now, Keilah is in the lowlands of Judah. It's northwest of the city of Hebron, if you can think of a map or if you know where those spots are. And these Israelites were being threatened by the Philistines. David inquires of the Lord and says, Lord, would you have me, since you've made me aware of this, since I'm cognizant of that, that the Philistines are attacking my countrymen, my brethren, would you have me go to battle on their behalf? And the Lord said, go. David told his men, who were numbering about 600 right now at this time, hey, we're going to go fight the Philistines. They said, David, no way. That's crazy. David, we're being chased by Saul and Saul's army. We've got big problems of our own. We can't take on the burden, the responsibility of fighting for the men of Keilah. That's insane. That's crazy. David then sought the Lord once more. He didn't rebuke his men for lack of faith or limited vision. He heard what they had to say. He sought the Lord once again, and the Lord reaffirmed to David, this is what I want you to do. Go fight for the men of Keilah. So David did what he was commanded to. He went and he fought against them. Well, as the story continues, the plot thickens. For after David secured the victory, slaughtered the Philistines, wiped out the enemy, he then got wind of the fact that Saul and Saul's men were headed towards Keilah. Saul knew that David was there. And David once again prayed and sought the Lord. Lord, are these men in this city that we just fought for, that we just delivered, are these men going to betray me and turn me over to Saul and to Saul's army? The Lord said, yes, that's precisely what they're going to do. So David scooted out of there. Now, the thing we talked about on Sunday that I want to remind you of is this is so often the way that it is. The people that you help out the most and give the most to. David fought for these guys. He risked his life, his men's lives too. And what do they do? They're going to betray David and turn him over to his enemy, Saul. The question becomes, well, if that's the way it is in life, and it is, that so frequently the people that you give to, help out, care for, will be the ones that down the road may turn their back on you or on me or betray us. It's an inevitability. Well, why should we then do such a thing? Help out people. If because of the frailty of humanity, there's going to be a vulnerability to their betraying us, why even bother? And remember, we talked about don't have a cow because you're going to be betrayed, but rather don't have a cow, but rather what? Take a stake. Remember what happens here? Verse 5 of our chapter, David, what happened? Hey, because he fought the Philistines that day, David and his boys took the cattle of the Philistines. These guys, David and his boys, were always low on supplies, as we have seen and shall see tonight, perhaps. David and his boys were always short on supplies, but because David went to battle for some other guys to help out somebody else, even though he had his own problems, his own struggles, he went to battle for somebody else. And in the process, hey, he didn't have a cow, he got a steak. They had steaks that night. They took the cattle of the Philistines, and man, they had a barbecue. Well, that's why we should do what we're told to do. Give, and it shall be given. The measure that you measure out, it'll be measured back to you again. You want steak? Hey, then here's what you need to do. Give out to anybody, to everybody that the Lord directs you to. Even though they might disappoint you down the road or not appreciate you later on, realize that in giving out, you get back. And remember, too, the reason that they're that way, unreliable, unappreciative, is because they're just like you. You're the same way as the one that you're mad at or disappointed in. You're the same way as the one that you perhaps are hurt by or find fault with. We're all in the same boat. David himself knew that he couldn't complain about these men's betrayal because David had just betrayed previously in the chapter before this one, the priests at Nob. He would later on betray a man by the name of Uriah as he took his wife and then sent Uriah to Uriah's murderous death. All that's to say, you keep serving, you keep giving, you keep loving, you keep caring, even though you know that sometimes you'll be betrayed or not appreciated one day. That's okay, because you get steak in the meantime. You get back. And remember, you're the same way. You've betrayed more people than you can remember. You've let down more people than you're aware of. You've blown it worse than you have any idea about. You say, what are you telling me? I'm saying we have a wonderful spiritual Alzheimer's. We forget the bad stuff that we've done. We don't notice the times we've let folks down. All we do is remember what some others did to us or to me. Ask God to show you. Lord, show me, please, in your mercy, all the people I've let down in the past year. You better carve out a day or two or three because it will surprise you. And then you'll have to say, how could I ever come down on anybody else? Well, the plot thickens. David now leaves, he and his men, which were about 600, verse 13. And David escaped from Keilah, and he went to the wilderness, verse 14, of Ziph. Ziph, it literally means refining place. Evidently, the mountain areas of Ziph was a place where there was minerals, and there was also evidently a smelting or refining area. Minerals were taken from that area, we know historically, and they were refined. What a great place for David to go. David is going to a place where God declares, I am refining you, David. Just like what a smelter would do with minerals, with gold or silver, heat it up until it becomes molten gold or molten silver. All of the dross, the impurities, are burned away in the heat or by the heat that is burning under the pot where that liquid gold or liquid silver is. And as you know, as we've talked about before, the smelter, the iron worker or the gold guy or the silver dude or what have you, these guys would know when the product was pure and ready to go, when they could look in the pot of liquid gold or liquid silver or whatever and see the reflection of their own face. So too, the Lord says, I'm going to allow the heat to be turned up a bit for you, John, to burn out the impurities so that, hey, those things might be taken away, that my face might be reflected through your life, that people might be drawn to me and see something of me. But that means you got to go through some fiery trials, some refining, John, so that people can see me. That's been your prayer. That's what you've wanted for your kids, for your family, for your neighbors, for the community to see me. Therefore, you need to be refined a bit, the impurities burnt off and done away with. C.H. Spurgeon declares that affliction is the tuner of the harp and the sanctifier of the song. I like that. That's what affliction is. When the heat is turned up, when fiery trials come my way, it tunes up the harp and it sanctifies the song. And you read the Psalms that David wrote and you say, how did he get such inspiration? How could he have such intimacy with the Lord, such passion for the Lord, such understanding about the Lord? He got that because he was in places like this, the wilderness of Ziph, where people were chasing him down, where he was betrayed by people that he had helped out, where he would feel forsaken and alone, but there God was dealing with him. How long does a process of affliction or refining go on? Longer than you might think. It takes a while for the impurities to be burnt off, for the reflection of his face to be seen from my life or from your life. And sometimes we say, oh, Lord, I got the point. Let's move on. The Lord says, no, you don't, John. It's going to take a while. And here David is in the wilderness of Ziph. And Saul, as he's there in that place, Saul was chasing him every day, but God. I always love that phrase. I always mark that phrase. It appears throughout the scriptures. But God, hey, Saul is after him. Saul is out to get him, but God was there for him. The same thing is true for you too. God is there. Satan seeks to devour you as a roaring lion, but God is with you. And greater is he that is in you than the one that comes against you. Guarantee. God delivered him not into Saul's hand. Now, David, verse 15, Saul saw that Saul was come out to seek his life, and David was in the wilderness of Ziph in a wood. Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David into the wood and strengthened his hand in God. I like that phrase. Jonathan rises up, makes his way to where David is hiding out, and doesn't wring his hands in anxiety, but strengthens David's hand in God, you see. Lots of people will worry with you, but that's not the people that you need to be around you. You need people that will strengthen your hand in God, that will say to you, trust in the Lord. Put away your sorrow. Put away your fear and trust in him, because God is here. The Lord will see you through. We look for sympathy, at least I do, but the Lord knows that that is not what I need ultimately. What I need is somebody, people, to come my way and strengthen my hand in God. That's what we all need ultimately. Jonathan was that kind of guy. He didn't come to David and just cry, oh, I can't believe my dad is out to get you. And oh, this is awful that you're stuck out here in the place of refinement, in the time of testing. Oh, poor you. No, Jonathan went and strengthened David's hand in God. He said, fear not, David, for the hand of Saul, my father, shall not find thee. I don't care how big his army is. I don't care how long he tracks you down. He's not going to get to you because you, verse 17, shall be king over Israel, and I shall be next to you. I'm abdicating my role as crown prince. You're the man. You're going to be king, and I'll be there serving you. And my father knows that this is true. So those two, verse 18, they once more cut covenant before the Lord. Once more, they did what they had done before, took some kind of an animal, cut it in two. That's what cutting covenant was called, or what it meant in those days. And then the two would meet in the middle of the dead carcass that was cut in two. And you would pronounce your promise to each other. You would state your intentions for each other. And what you were saying in the midst of that dead animal cut in two, hey, I'm deadly serious about what I'm telling you. And if I don't follow through on my end of the bargain, let me be dead meat. You see, that's the idea. I'm serious about this. I'm committed to this. And those two cut covenant. That's literally what's being said there when it says they made a covenant. The word in the Hebrew is cut covenant. They cut this animal. They met in the middle and they made this commitment once again to each other. David then abode in the wood and Jonathan went back to his house. This is the last time these two will actually be together in our story. Well, then came up the Ziphites, the guys that were in the place of refinement in the area of Ziph. They came to Saul saying, hey, David hides himself in the woods where we are. Now, therefore, verse 20, O king, come down according to all the desire of your soul, and our part shall be to deliver him into your hand. Man, what a bummer. I mean, David is there in the wilderness. He was already betrayed or was going to be betrayed by the men of Keilah, his brothers. They were from Judah. And now he's in Ziph. And those rat finks go find Saul and they say, hey, Saul, we got your boy. He's in our territory. Send your army. We'll capture him and turn him over to you. And watch what Saul says. Oh, blessed be ye of the Lord, for you have compassion on me. Saul is a guy that speaks the language of piety. He's always saying, oh, bless the Lord, and oh, all these phrases of spirituality, but they're not coming from reality. Saul does not have a walk with the Lord or a heart for the Lord, but he knows how to talk about the Lord. He has the talk, but not the walk. And this is kind of what happens. People have all the symbols and all the language and all the image, but it's not reality. And so too with Saul. He typifies that. He illustrates that. He had all the phrases. He was coming across outwardly as a spiritual man, but in reality, he was anything but. Oh, bless the Lord, he says. May the Lord bless you because you guys have had compassion on me in turning David over into my custody. So go, he says, I pray you, prepare yet and know and see his place where his haunt is. Find out where he's holed up and who hath seen him. For it has been told me that he's very subtle. He's sneaky. So don't take your eye off of him. Go track him down and stay close by, you see. Take knowledge of all the places, verse 23, where he is hiding. So they arose and they went to Ziph, these Ziphites, these rat finks. They went there to keep their eyes on David in order to apprehend him and turn him over to Saul. David and his men, verse 24, they were in the wilderness of Maon. Saul sent his men to seek him. Saul went as well. And they were told David, where David was, and they told David, pardon me. So David came down into a rock and abode in the wilderness of Maon, in that area there of Judah. When Saul heard that, he pursued after David in the wilderness of Maon. Saul went on this side of the mountain, and David and his men were on that side of the mountain. David made haste to get away for fear of Saul. David now seems to be trapped. His back is to a mountain range, but there is a valley between where Saul's men are now gathering and where David's men are now holed up, or they seem to be entrapped, actually. Saul, all he has to do is go down the valley and up the side of the mountain where David is, and that would be curtains for David and his boys. So David was there. But Saul and his men compassed David round about. They had David backed up against a mountain range and they surrounded him on every other side. And it doesn't look good for David. It seems as though this could be the end, humanly speaking. But right then. I love the buts of the Bible. But there came a messenger unto Saul saying, haste thee, come, the Philistines have invaded our land. Saul, get back home. The Philistines are mounting an attack against us. See, God has a way of moving in, of protecting you, of helping me when it seems as though, oh no, this is it. I'm not going to survive. I'm through. I'm blue. I'm down. This is bad. But listen, right then, hey, the Philistines, God had stirred their hearts to launch this attack, this invasion. So Saul returned from pursuing David and went against the Philistines. Therefore, they call the name of that place Selah Hamalekoth, which means the rock of division, or literally the rock of protection. I like that phrase. That's worth noting for you Bible students. David had no place to go. He was hemmed in. He was surrounded by the enemy, but there was a rock of protection that was between him and Saul, you see. The rock, our rock, the rock of ages, Jesus Christ. He's never let me down. He's never dropped the ball. So many times I've thought, I just can't figure this out. I don't know how this is going to work. But the Lord always comes through for me. He'll always come through for you. Even when we are faithless, he is what? Faithful still, because he cannot deny himself. And so Saul goes his way. Without striking a blow, David was delivered. Without striking a blow, without firing an arrow or hurling a spear or unsheathing a sword, David was delivered by the Lord. Sometimes when we try to take things into our hands, it just doesn't work out. This story caught my eye in the press on the internet as of March 5th. What would Jesus do if he were an elementary school kid and someone called him Little Bo Peep? Well, on Thursday, which was first week in March, an 11-year-old boy dressed as Jesus for Dress Like Your Favorite Book Character Day. So the kids in the school got to dress like their favorite book character. And his favorite book was the Bible, so he dressed like Jesus. But when he dressed like Jesus, he got into a fight after school, the police said. The Crestridge Elementary School student had worn a robe and was carrying a staff. A 12-year-old from the neighboring middle school saw him and made fun of him, calling him Little Bo Peep and Heidi, because he had this staff and he was wearing this robe, you see. So the two then got in a fight. Jesus got a black eye. The children each said the other struck first, the police report said. I wonder how often Jesus does get a black eye. Because we strike. Because we say, well, you know, I've got to protect myself. I've got to make it happen. I've got to stand up for my rights. I've got to do something. And I wonder if Jesus doesn't get a black eye in the process.
Interesting thought. Do we give Jesus a black eye by our actions? Do we damage his reputation by what we say or do? It's a good thing to consider before we speak or act.
This teaching is also available on the Searchlight website at johncorson.com. You will also find on the website Pastor John's books and other Bible study resources. Again, the address of the website is johncorson.com.
We all go through challenging times in our lives, but we are not alone in these times. We have a faithful and loving God who walks with us day by day. To help us explore the faithfulness of God in these difficult times, Pastor John has made a book available called A Future and a Hope. In this book, John shares some of his personal experiences in dealing with tragedies, including the death of his young wife and later the death of his 16-year-old daughter. As John relates his own stories, we see a God who is faithful and compassionate at all times. A Future and a Hope is especially comforting for those who are currently experiencing tragedy or loss in their life. If you would like this book for yourself or someone you know, you can order it from our website at johncorson.com.
Searchlight is an independent ministry that is not financially supported by any church or organization. We appreciate your prayers and support. May the Lord richly bless you.